Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and a very good morning to you. It is a Judaism 101.9. It is Wednesday, and it's just after 11, in fact, 10 minutes past 11. And we are back with Judaism 101.9, looking at things Jewish, going back a little bit in history, seeing what these days are all about, what times we have ahead, and special things that we should know about upcoming special events in Judaism that date back a long, long time, and thinking about all sorts of wonderful and great things that we should have in mind and we should be thinking about and doing as Jews in a very modern world, but obviously in touch with our heritage, with our Torah, with our mitzvot, with all the things that we should be bearing in mind. And of course, we always start off with a little bit of a playback, a throwback to times gone by, because the past certainly reflects in the present and in the future. And say, if we look back in history at the days that we have from today and up ahead, today, the 13th of Iyar, is the yahrzeit of a lesser-known individual, but a very important man, Rabbi Yisrael Aryeh Leib, who passed away in 1952. He was the brother of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson. So he was Yisrael Aryeh Leib Schneerson, and he was the youngest son of Rabbi Levi Yitzchok and Rebbe Tzenchana, who had famously three sons, the Rebbe being the oldest, Yisrael Aryeh Leib being the youngest. But he was born in Likolaev in 1906, and he quickly became renowned as a great scholar, exceptional genius, and at a young age, he was already teaching Tanya, the mystical foundational work of Chabad, to an audience of very eager adults. He eventually emigrated to Israel, and in his later years, moved to Liverpool in England to study at a local university. It was there that he passed away at a relatively young age, in 1952. His funeral and his burial took place in Tzfas, in the north of Israel. When we look forward to tomorrow, while tomorrow may be a public holiday, of course, 1st of May, public holiday in these parts of the in this part of the world, it is also a Jewish holiday. And I'm sure you knew that, but what is this Jewish holiday? It is known as the Second Pesach, the second Pesach, which we're going to talk about a little bit more in a little bit more detail, but it's relevant to mention that tomorrow is this special chag. So stay posted to hear a little bit more about what the second Pesach, the second Passover, is actually all about. If we then think about other things that happened on that fateful or famous day and date of the 14th of Iyar, the second Passover, we have to think about Rabbi Meir from the second century of the Common Era. He was amongst the foremost disciples of Rabbi Akiva. His colleague called him Meir because he enlightened the eyes of the sages with his genius and scholarship. His long life was rife with personal tragedy, and aside from his personal travails, he lived in the troubled times following the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. His beloved teacher, Rabbi Akiva, was executed by the Romans, and it was with that that he fled to Babylon until those persecutions eased up. His wisdom and his teachings, quoted in the Mishnah and the Talmud, that every anonymous teaching in the Mishnah is actually attributed, believe it or not, to Rabbi Meir. So this great and incredible genius, a great incredible man. His wife Bruria was also famous for her Torah knowledge, her piety and wisdom. And he, in fact, passed away and was buried in the holy city of Tiberias, of Tveria. So two great sages, great people that we've thought about today already, buried in the north of Israel, Tiberias, where we know a lot of very, very famous kforim, graves of tzaddikim, or, and of course, in Tzfat, and that environment as well. The 14th of Iyar, unfortunately, marks a day of a massacre in 1605 of the Jews of Byzantium in Austria, who were massacred on this day, and also the German burning of Jewish books. Following the rise of the Nazi Party in Germany in 1933, they burned thousands of books written by Jews, which were deemed to be un-German. And unfortunately, this all happened on the 14th of Iyar. But believe it or not, in a strange twist of events. It was on the 14th of Iyar of 1960 that Eichmann was captured. He had been a key party in implementing Hitler's final solution, and he was captured by the Mossad in Buenos Aires in Argentina. He was in charge of all transportation required for the shipment of Jews to the extermination camps, and the height of his career was in Hungary in 1944 when he managed to transport, the numbers are staggering, he himself oversaw the transport of 400,000 Jews to the gas chambers in less than 5 weeks. After the war, he fled to Argentina, lived under an assumed name, which was Ricardo Clement, and that was for the 10 years until he was caught by Mossad agents who abducted him on the 11th of May 1960, smuggled him out of the country, and a famous story brought him to trial in Jerusalem, where he eventually was found guilty on all counts, sentenced to death, and he was hanged at the Rambla prison on May the 31st in 1962. So the capture took place, and it was 1962, 31st of May, 2 years later, that he was actually executed. And during the 4 months of the trial, over 100 witnesses testified against him. He took the stand and used the defense that he was just obeying orders. And why me, he asked. Why not the local policemen? Thousands of them. They would have been shot if they refused to round up the Jews for the death camps. Everybody killed the Jews. What a tragedy. What a terrible, terrible story. And amazing that this happened on Pesach Sheni, on the second Pesach, on the 14th of Iyar. The 15th of Iyar, which is going to be Shabbos, in 1313, before the Common Era, the matzah became depleted for the Jewish people who were coming out of Mitzrayim, coming out of Egypt. They had brought with them, if you think about it, they had brought with them enough for 60 meals. Now, you think you cater well on Pesach for just the week. Yeah, they catered for 60 meals and each, and it was exhausted by the 15th of Iyar, the 30th day after the Exodus. And then the people complained to Moshe that they have nothing to eat. Hashem notified them that bread would come from heaven, and so it was that the manna came into being following this date. And that's the 15th of Iyar, which is going to be on Shabbos, the middle of the month. It also happens to be the date in 1727, where the Jews were expelled from Russia. A few months prior to her death, Empress Catherine the First, second wife of Peter the Great, expelled all Jews from Russia. And in 1883, riots broke out in Rostov-on-Don in Russia, which was home to 14 shuls and many communal institutions. With encouragement of local Russian officials, a wave of anti-Jewish riots, pogroms, swept the city on the 15th of Iyar in 1883. And then on the 17th of Iyar, which is going to be on Monday, the Roman garrison was defeated in the year 66 of the Common Era, following the theft of silver from the temple in Jerusalem on the 17th of Iyar. The Jewish Defense Force attacked and defeated the Roman garrison station in Jerusalem. And then if we just pop forward to the 18th of Iyar, we know that it was the date on which the plague amongst Rabbi Akiva's disciples ended, around about 120 of the Common Era, and of course the passing of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai in the second century of the Common Era, which happened on that day as well. It's also the day of the passing of the Rambam in 1573, and several other amazing things that happened on Lag BaOmer, which we will address, we will talk about later in the show. But
get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Great to be in your company. Yes, this is Rabbi Michael Katz. This is Judaism 101.9. And of course, you are on Chai FM, and it's great to be with you today, sharing some thoughts about Judaism, some things about the times we're living in, and some things about the times of our lives, in a very, very figurative sense of what we're dealing with on in and within the Jewish calendar. So tonight and tomorrow is Pesach Sheni, the second Pesach. What is the second Pesach actually all about? I always quip that most people, I'm sure, believe that one Pesach is enough in a year, and all the effort and all the energy that's put into it, we can't possibly think about a second Pesach. But the second Pesach was something that came about through a really, really profound and important action that was taken by the Jewish people themselves. It's an amazing thing. This was actually a chag, if we think deeply into it, that was really brought about by the action, by the argument, and by the statements of the Jewish people themselves. Now, we've often heard about, and we've often interpreted the verse that is quoted directly from Pirkei Avot, from the Ethics of Our Fathers, that says that we have to know da ma'ala ma'ala mimach, da ma'ala mimcha. You should have to know, and you need to know that you need to know what is above you, is the way that we always interpret it or translate it. Know what is above you. But as Chassidus explains, it actually can be read as you should know that what is above is from you. In other words, we have the power as individuals, through the gift of our neshamas, of our souls. Each and every one of us has a godly soul. What does that mean? It means we have certain godly powers. Now, let's not get carried away or have any delusions of grandeur, but let's just think about the fact that we have strength. There is strength within our souls to accomplish great and wonderful and incredible things, to the extent that this interpretation tells us that we can affect, and we do affect, what happens in Shamayim. And therefore we can affect what happens all over the world. And that is through the power that we are given in our souls, and through the performance of our mitzvot, through the learning of our Torah and so on, we do literally affect not only the environment and not only our immediate families, not only our health and our wealth and all of those things that we know, but we can and we do affect things in heaven. Now, how's this for a story? The Jewish people come and they complain to Moshe. They come to Moses in the Midbar, in the desert, and they say to him, listen, the rules and regulations that we're studying all about Pesach make it clear that if a person was in a state of impurity for whatever reason, perhaps contact with the dead, and which certainly was nothing that he was doing wrong, but just happened to be in the vicinity of a dead person, or someone in his family unfortunately passes away and he has to attend to the burial, etc., of this, which is a great, great mitzvah, and that happens to be in close proximity to Pesach, it means that he would be precluded from bringing the Pesach offering in a state of impurity. Or perhaps, and we've got to think about times gone by, and while it does happen often today as well, that people get stranded. They're on a trip, they're on a business trip, and they're out of town, and the caravan that they were having to leave in with the camels crossing Europe, going from one side of the world to the next, as it was known in those days, due to flooded rivers or due to downpours or whatever the case may be, and they couldn't make it back. They couldn't get back in time for Pesach. So they were far away. They happened to be in a state of impurity. And these were things that happened to them by chance. It wasn't even things that they did, but or that they did intentionally. They weren't meaning to miss out. They wanted to bring the Pesach offering, but because of that, they miss out. And now, for a year, they can't bring a Pesach offering. And it was so important to them. And they realized the importance, the intrinsic imperative importance of the Pesach offering, or the Paschal offering that had to be brought on the day before Pesach, on the 14th of Nisan. They realized how important it was. And they said, how can we be jeopardized in such a way? How can anybody be jeopardized? Why take a person who really wanted to do this, but through no fault of his own, is precluded? Doesn't seem fair. Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, famously refers this on high, doesn't have an immediate answer for them, and he addresses God himself, and he says, what do we do with these situations? And the idea of Pesach Sheni is born. the idea of a second Pesach, and it appears in the Torah itself, where Hashem says, and Moshe transmits this to the Jewish people, there will be a date 1 month later, on the 14th of Iyar, exactly 1 month after the time of the bringing of this Pesach offering, that you could bring the Pesach offering. Now, we've got to remember that this did not mean that all of Pesach was observed. Some people kind of got the wrong end of the stick and they felt that, you know, you had to keep the whole Pesach. No, it was the idea of the offering. So the offering was brought on the 14th of Iyar, when a person was precluded from bringing it on the 14th of Nisan, and they had this opportunity to make good, to have all the benefits and all the inclusions and all the spiritual upliftment that the Pesach offering clearly brought about for the souls of those who were bringing the Pesach offering. They had this opportunity 1 month later to make good. And added to it, by the way, was that it wasn't only for things that were and that happened unintentionally. That even if a person intentionally had gotten into one of those situations where he was now precluded, it wasn't something that actually happened by accident, but he knowingly had gone away, for instance, and knew that he wasn't going to make it back. For whatever reason, that then was deemed to be accidental as well, and he was actually permitted to bring the Pesach offering 1 month later and make up for the loss that he had incurred through not being around at that time or being in a state of impurity and therefore unable to enter into the temple to bring that Pesach offering. So an amazing idea, an amazing opportunity that was granted to the Jewish people. But it came about because of a sincere wish to be involved, to do the right thing, to be close to God, to do what Hashem had asked us to do, and nobody wanted to miss out. You know, I fear, and I think, if you were to say to the average Jew today, you know, like, you, okay, you went around for Pesach, you know, just, it's like scratched off the calendar. There may be many who say, well, you know what, it's such a hassle, it's so expensive, it's so difficult. No. These people realized the importance of the whole process of the Pesach offering on themselves and on their beings and on the environment and on the whole world, that this was something that they just desperately did not want to miss out on. And they campaigned for it and they were triumphant. And it brought about the most amazing message. And the most amazing message is this, as spelled out by the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe and many others, that the idea of the second Pesach was that it is never too late. It is never too late. You are never done and dusted. It is never too late to do a U-turn. It's never too late to say you're sorry. It's never too late to turn your life around. It's never too late to make good on previous misdemeanors, things that you may have gotten wrong, that you may have missed out on, that you may not have done. There is always an opportunity to catch it up. And yes, we know that once a day is gone, the day is gone, and we can't bring back time, we can't turn back the clocks. But from a Jewish point of view, the idea of teshuva, the idea of return, of repentance, is exactly this, that you can make good, and you can actually make the misdemeanor, the fault, the thing that you missed out, you can actually make that part of your armory going forward. You can fix those black holes, but you can actually make them into the most glorious statements of what you are truly all about and what you really want to be by taking them on board, by fixing those, and by making good on your past. It is a notion that was really instituted, brought to bear on the entire Jewish people with this concept of Pesach Sheni. So how do we celebrate Pesach Sheni today? What is the run of things and what is the order of the day for tomorrow? It is a special chag. Yeah, it's not one of those chagim, it's not one of those festivals where you're not allowed to work. Although, because it's Workers' Day, I never quite understood the notion, but Workers' Day should surely be celebrated with going to work. Workers' Day is a day off where you don't work. Seems to be counterintuitive. But anyway, the Jewish people had this idea, we have this opportunity of a day where we can go to work. Work can be done on this day. We could drive, we could handle money, we can cook, we can do all of those things. It is not a chag in that sense, but it is a chag in the sense that we do not say penitential prayers. The Tachanun prayers are omitted tomorrow. From tonight, by the way, after dark. It does not apply to Mincha this afternoon, but it does apply to the whole day tomorrow, which is Erev Shabbat. We do not say penitential prayers, Tachanun prayers. We also go out of our way tomorrow at one of our meals, and many say tonight as well, that we should eat some matzah. So reminiscent of the afikoman that we eat at the end of the Pesach Seder, for and in reference to the Pesach offering that was brought, so here too, in reference to this Pesach offering that should have or could have been brought on the 14th of Iyar as a makeup, as an opportunity to make good on what was missing or what we thought was lost but now has been found. We have this great opportunity of the second Pesach where we can eat some matzah, think about the opportunity of that return. We do not have to have our houses cleaned out for Pesach. We do not have to eat it on Pesach Dika vessels. We do not have to do all of that stuff, but we eat a piece of matzah tomorrow during the day, perhaps with your breakfast, perhaps with your brunch, lunchtime, etc. Don't leave it too late, because there come all sorts of questions about washing for a meal when it gets into the afternoon before Shabbos. But we certainly do that for the date of Pesach Sheni. So while there are so many things that we know that happened on this incredible day, Pesach Sheni is here in the middle of the month of Iyar, and it has this great significance. I was listening to a story the other day on the radio where they're talking about the reference to a blue moon, and I'm sure people know this, but just in the world out there, the concept of a blue moon is where you have, in a secular month, where you have two full moons in one month, and that actually happens because you're going to have one full moon tomorrow night, for the 15th of the month, a full moon on the 1st of May, and there's going to be another one right at the end of the month, in the month of May, and they call that a blue moon. So while we're focusing with things to do with the moon, let's think rather tomorrow about Pesach Sheni, the middle of the month, where there's this opportunity to make good. And isn't that really one of the messages of the moon as well? It always waxes and wanes. It wanes, it may be small, it may be at times invisible, but it comes bouncing back with a great fullness of the moon in the middle of the month. And of course, that will be tomorrow night at the end of Pesach Sheni.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. This is Rabbi Michael Katz. This is Judaism 101.9. This is Chai FM, and it's great to have you with us. And we are thinking about things that we need to know for this coming week. And when we talk about Pesach Sheni, which is tomorrow, and of course Shabbos that follows thereafter, where we have the Parsha of Emor, we then look forward to the coming week when Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day of the Omer, will be on Tuesday. Now, Lag BaOmer, we have said already, was a date that marks two very, very important events in Jewish history. First of all, we know that the students of Rabbi Akiva, who passed away around about 120 of the Common Era, it was in the weeks between Pesach and Shavuos, Pesach and Shavuot, that there was a terrible plague that befell the students of Rabbi Akiva, and 24,000 of them perished. The Talmud says it was because they did not respect one another. But the plague cessation on the 18th of Iyar, which was the 33rd day of the Omer, or as is known, Lag BaOmer. We've got to know that Lag, Lamed, Gimel is 30, Gimel is 3, 33rd day of the Omer. It's one of the reasons that it's celebrated each year for the cessation of this plague. And therefore, it is a day on which we need to show extra Ahavat Israel. We've got to tune in to our love for our fellow man, because that is in fact what brought about the destruction in the first place. And just by simple Torah logic, if it was a day on which the plague ceased, this is a day that we need to kind of honor with that love that unfortunately was lacking, or so it would seem to have been lacking around its edges in the time of Rabbi Akiva's students. Now, It also marks the very important time of the passing of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, or known as the Rashbi, was the leading disciple of Rabbi Akiva, and is one of the most foremost Tanaim, one of the foremost rabbis of the Talmud, whose teachings of Torah law are collected in the Mishnah. He was also the first one to publicly teach the mystical dimension of the Torah known as Kabbalah, and the author of the basic work on Kabbalah, the Zohar. It was for 13 years that Rabbi Shimon actually had to hide in a cave, escaping the wrath of the Romans, because he had criticized the government, and he had to go into hiding and was there for 13 years inside a cave. But on the day of his passing, on the 18th of Iyar, the 33rd day of the Omer, by divine providence worked out to be exactly that date that was linked with his great teacher Rabbi Akiva and his students, and the fact that he was one of the only sole survivors, Rabbi Shimon gathered his disciples and he revealed many of the deeper secrets of divine wisdom and instructed them to actually mark the day of his passing as the day of my joy, and explaining to them that the neshama of a tzaddik, when he's accomplished everything that he needs to accomplish down below and he goes on high, this is a day of celebration. We talk about the Aliyat HaNeshama and how he actually elevates and can elevate the whole world on that date, and therefore has to be celebrated. Now, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was, of course, one of the greatest teachers of Jewish law and ethics. Many of his sayings and laws in the Talmud, in fact, reflect the holiness of his character and his total devotion to Torah. He, in fact, was once known to have said, if I were present at the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai, I would have demanded two mouths, one for continuous study of the words of Torah and the other for eating. But then he admitted that this would not be very wise, since even now when man has but one mouth, he says many wrong things. How much more so if he had two? So, coupled with great genius, also a little twist of a sense of humor. And even though he lived the life of a recluse for many years, Rabbi Shimon knew the importance of good human relationships. He was known to have said, man should rather jump into a fiery furnace than offend another in public. And he also said, to deceive anyone by words is worse than cheating him out of money. He who lets arrogance get the better of him is like a heathen worshipping idols. In the Ethics of Our Fathers, in Pirkei Avot, we find this saying from him: there are three crowns, the crown of Torah, the crown of priesthood, the crown of royalty, but the crown of a good name exceeds all of them. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was the author of the Zohar, as we said before, the Zohar translating as brilliance, containing mystical interpretations of the Torah, and it is the chief source of what we call Kabbalah. For many generations, his teachings were studied by a few select scholars until the great scholar Rabbi Moshe ben Shem Tov de Leon published the Zohar about 700 years ago. Rabbi Shimon is also the author of Sifri and the Mechilta of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. He passed away in Miron, which is not that far from Tzvat, about 10 kilometers outside of Tzvat in the land of Israel. And it is a day on which many, many Jews, I'm not sure what's going to happen in Israel this year, make an annual pilgrimage to his day, to his grave, on this day, and the day that he died. And there they light candles, they pray at his grave, they make bonfires. I think bonfires have been banned for this year in Israel for security reasons. And, of course, children go there to have their opshenish, because no haircutting was permitted in these days up until Lag BaOmer, when haircutting is permitted. And it is a great day of celebration. That's on Monday night and Tuesday of the coming week. Be back with you to sum up right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and welcome back. Yes, we need to go to loveyourfellow.com and we need to learn a lot more about Ahavat Yisrael, and especially in these days when we think about the messages of these days, of Pesach Sheni, of the fact that there is always another opportunity. We can apply that also to Ahavat Yisrael, to the idea of loving your fellow man. So you say, well, you know what, it's too far gone. The argument is so deep and it's so endemic and it's so profoundly difficult for us to actually put it right. It's easier to keep it as an argument and to stay away from it. No. Here is the opportunity to make good, to come back to revive the relationship, to be friends, to forgive, to forget, to move forward. Because without that, it actually, you're the one that is held down by it. And then when we think about the idea of Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day of the Omer, which is coming up on Tuesday, we have this important and very, very imperative idea of the fact that the students of Rabbi Akiva died because Einam Nosnu Kovod Zeh, they didn't show the required, the requisite respect for each other. They didn't respect each other's opinions. They were very dogmatic in what they were delivering, what they were saying. They were fanatical. And while there may, in some senses, not be anything wrong with fanaticism, but when it gets out of hand, and when you ignore others, or you tread on their toes, or you disrespect them, that is when it gets into dangerous territory, and it can become offensive and can actually hurt people's feelings, take away their sense of self, etc., and cause irreparable harm and damage. So we need to reverse that. We need to change that. And the messages of both Pesach Sheni and Lag BaOmer is love your fellow. Get a little closer. Turn things around. You can make good. It's never too late. And in fact, in honor of the students of Rabbi Akiva, in honor of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, what a wonderful thing to be able to do. And in so doing, to influence the entire world with the love and the unity, and the effect of that great unity and love will ultimately be that we not only come closer, but we bring about the incredible fulfillment of the dream of the Jewish people, that Mashiach will come, that we will have peace on earth, and that this love that we show for each other will actually be literally, in today's day and age, it'll go viral. And as it goes viral, everybody will come closer to each other, everybody will be at peace with each other, everybody will be more understanding, more respectful of each other, and that will be the perfect platform for the coming of Mashiach. May it happen speedily in our time. I want to wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbat up ahead, a great Pesach Sheni, and a great Lag BaOmer. And I look forward to being back with you same time, same place next week for another exciting episode of Judaism 101.9.